All right, well, we'll let them do that, and I'll do what I'm going to do. So TypeScript, how many have used it in here? How many have actually done anything? All right, so how many have done it for real? Like, how many have done an actual project? All right, excellent. You guys get about 20 minutes in. Come on up, and we'll have you. Now everybody's like, no, I'm not doing it. So one of the really cool things about TypeScript is that you can take what you know today and apply it to what you want to do to move to the future, but move to the future today. And so, Andrew, what's before we jump in, what's your favorite feature? You have a favorite feature?
It's probably the typing side of it. I mean, I like the strong type, to be able to get IntelliSense on all the different variables you're working with, or when the responses that come back from like HTTP requests, to get the strong type that comes back. And I think it's also that you're writing JavaScript. I can write JavaScript or ECMAScript 6 today and not worry about which browser is going to be supported
in. So you
don't
have a single answer, in other words.
No, I don't. No, I'm long-winded. What's your favorite one? What's your favorite part?
I think my favorite feature, you just said it. So you just killed my thunder. So for those that have used TypeScript, you'll know that you can actually basically write ES6 modern code today so that you kind of future-proof your apps for tomorrow. And that's actually one of my favorite features. There's a particular company who, now that we're filming, I'm not allowed to say the name, I heard, but about 2 years ago, they decided to move to TypeScript. And as a result, you know, now 2 years ago, they're now basically doing ES6 code and have been for the last 2 years, which is really awesome from a maintenance standpoint. So let's jump in and talk about some of the highlights here. So one of my favorite features, in addition to what we just said, is I mentioned earlier, you can take your existing code, and by existing code, I mean your existing JavaScript. So if Andrew has many thousand lines of JavaScript, he literally can rename the file to .ts, and it could just work.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that doesn't buy you much, but it basically is something that sits on top of JavaScript. So it's not this own language. A lot of people kind of think that TypeScript's like its own, often la-la land, language somewhere. Mm. And, you know, it's not. It's also very modular. Mm-hmm. So one of the cool things, a lot of you probably do .NET, I suspect. And it's modular in the sense that you can do classes if you want, which we'll talk about that coming up. You can actually do something called modules. You can do internal and external modules. And this is a way to basically divide up your code into buckets, just like you do almost like namespaces, kind of, in .NET. And there's even some more there. How about large apps, Andrew?
That's a big thing. It's hard to maintain large applications with lots of JavaScript in it or that are based on just JavaScript, keeping track of the different files that are there. You've always got to keep them in memory, but in your memory. But with TypeScript, what it's going to give you the ability to do is that with the different editors, they're aware of all the other files that are in your project. Makes it a lot easier to figure out, do a little bit of IntelliSense, type completion, or autocomplete. Makes things a lot easier. So that's helping on the modularity of keeping things much more organized. Like we're used to using namespaces inside like a C# or VB.NET. And also helps on the scalable side of your application structure, making it easier to keep things much in a better organized state.
Yeah, it's and even small apps I think can benefit, but really for those building some larger scale apps, meaning more than five lines of code or so.
The ones I write.
Benefit, right. You can benefit from that. So we're going to look at strong typing coming up. So it is called TypeScript for a reason. You do have the ability to have strings and numbers and arrays and Booleans and things like that in your code if you want. It's optional, mm-hmm. which we'll kind of talk about as we move forward. Tooling support. So how many have downloaded Visual Studio Code in here? Anybody? How many are going, it's actually pretty freaking cool? I'm loving it.
Yeah.
I've had the opportunity over the last month, actually, to be playing with it, and it's awesome. So whether it's Visual Studio Code or Visual Studio, or Sublime Text, or
WebStorm.
WebStorm has awesome support
Notepad.
For TypeScript. Notepad does not. I'm sure they're working on a plugin or something, but maybe Notepad++. Right?
You just did another announcement. Notepad has extensibility
yeah.
now.
That's the big announcement for this talk, is that Notepad will not have extensible for it. Anyway, and then the final thing is, and we'll look at some of this coming up here, is ECMAScript 6. Is anybody actually doing native ES6, like raw ES6 code right now? Not a whole lot. Okay. Well, a lot of you raised your hand for TypeScript, though. So you are doing ES6. You just may not know you're doing ES6. ES6, if you haven't heard about all the cool new things, they're going to have support for classes and modularity and destructuring. And I can go on and on and on. There's literally this huge list of features. And TypeScript 1.5 is currently kind of in an early state, but you can get to it. It's up on GitHub and things. And it supports a broad range of the ES6 features. And that's why I say if you move to TypeScript, you can actually start leveraging ES6 today so that in, you know, 2 years, you're not going, man, I wish I would have gone with TypeScript.
Yeah, yeah.
So, all right.
So with this, what's the significance here of TypeScript and then what we're talking about today, building single page apps in Angular? So we've got two links up here that you should go take a look at. Back last year, Google, who is behind Angular, they announced something called AtScript. And their whole thing was basically saying that we love TypeScript, but there's a couple things that we want to add to it. Fast forward until, I guess, this past March, so just a few months ago, and it was announced that Google has been working with Microsoft to extend TypeScript a little bit farther than where it was already, and Google's dropped their idea of AtScript. Now, what's the significance of this? It means that now Angular is being built with TypeScript 1.5 for the entire source code for it. So this link right here is from a keynote that was given at ngConf, which is an Angular conference, Salt Lake City. The person on that screen there, that's Jonathan Turner from the Microsoft TypeScript team, explaining how everything kind of went through. And the next slide also has another link showing Brad Green and Igor from the Angular team that shows how they're building it. They're using TypeScript to build all of Angular, and then from there, it's being compiled to different languages, JavaScript and Dart and all that. But this shows that what they're doing is they're putting, we have first-class support for all this stuff right inside TypeScript using with when we're using it for Angular.
And that's what's cool about TypeScript. You know, if how many do Angular in here? Just so I can get, all right, quite a bit, actually.
I hope you raised your hand. Did you raise your hand?
I heard about it yesterday, but I'm still looking into it. But anyway.
Been a late night. Yeah. Late night building Angular.
All night last night. But, you know, whether you're doing that or Knockout or jQuery or Ember or there's a really cool new one I've been looking at called Riot.js, which I'm going, now that's a good name.
Yeah.
It doesn't really matter. Yeah. You know, you can do it with anything. So. All right, well, let's jump into some of the features. Then I'm going to show you just a real quick introduction for those that haven't done TypeScript and kind of what it looks like. And then we'll jump into this actual app that uses all this cool stuff. So, all right, strongly typed variables, strongly typed parameters. That's all very cool. Class support, very cool. Now, I want to emphasize on this. So I had the opportunity to sit down and do an interview with Anders Heilsberg. And I was a little actually nervous for that one. I don't get that nervous nowadays, but I was for that one. Because, you know, he's the guy that wrote this and C-sharp and Delphi and everything else
Pascal,
out there. Yep. And Pascal. Everything I've ever used, pretty much. But anyway, I had a slide up, and it said TypeScript classes. And he goes, no, we got to change that. And I was like, oh, okay, well, what do you want to do? He goes, well, you got to make sure people know that you don't have to use classes. You can still do functional programming if you want. And so, you know, by functional programming, basically the stuff we write today in JavaScript, and as I mentioned earlier, it still works here. So just kind of want to emphasize that yes, there is class support, but in certain circles of JavaScript, some people don't like that, and you don't have to. It doesn't force you down that road. Interfaces.
One of the nice things I like about the fact that we have both classes and interfaces inside of TypeScript is that when somebody like me, when I came from C#, or I came from ASP.NET, and I started doing a lot more client-side development with JavaScript, it's different, right? I mean, if I asked everybody in the room, how many of you are good, really good JavaScript developers? I love doing this. How many of you consider yourself really good JavaScript developers?
Like,
be honest. Raise your hand. Couple people. Now, how many of you fall into the category that I fall into, which is I've been hacking my way through this JavaScript thing for the last decade? For those of you that are watching this on the video, basically everybody else raised their hand. And of course, some people that raised their hand initially are like, oh, right, yeah, that's me. Right? You went to the site, you saw the drop-downs in the menus, you view source, you grabbed that library, you plugged it in yours, you got a bunch of errors, threw a bunch of alerts in there left and right. We've done that before. But what I like about it is that classes and interfaces and generics, these things make it easy to go from a strongly typed language with ASP.NET and or anything else that I'm working on, traditionally server-side stuff, to move into JavaScript, write the same style of stuff that I'm used to writing inside of JavaScript. But I'm doing it in TypeScript, and it's compiling down to JavaScript, making life a lot easier for me.
So whether it's, I'll give you a real life example real quick of this I think everybody relate to that Andrew just talked about. So how many of you use like a jQuery plugin where you got to pass in settings? And how many of you used a plugin that maybe the documentation was a little weak?
That doesn't happen. Right? That doesn't happen.
And you maybe had to go look at the source code. I know it was probably my plugin, but
I was using your stuff.
But anyway, you don't know what to pass. Well, with interfaces, you can actually make an interface that, in essence, maps. Hey, here's what this particular function call needs as the parameters. And so, just like in C# or Java or whatever you're using, you could actually go in and make an interface to clarify that.
Yep.
And a very cool feature.
Yeah.
Generics, we won't go too deep into that, but it's the same thing you do now. You have list of T. You can do list of T in generic or TypeScript. Modularity I've already touched on. We'll talk about that more as we jump in. Type definitions.
Yeah, type definitions. I'm going to talk a little bit more about this when we get into kind of the build experience, what that looks like. But essentially what this does is that when you're building your own application and you're running your own TypeScript files, everything, you're going to get IntelliSense for all the classes and the methods and the properties and stuff that you're writing. But then you'll find really quickly that you're not always writing your own stuff. You're always using another library. For example, Angular or jQuery. And you want that kind of visibility into those things like Dan was just talking about a second ago. So how do you get that stuff? Well, with type definitions, what someone has done is they've essentially written the signature for this external JavaScript library so that when you go $.something to go like do a selector inside of jQuery or angular.module, how do you get IntelliSense for that? TypeScript is going to be using a type definition. There's an open source project that has a ton of these things in there called Definitely Typed. We'll show you how we set this project up to take advantage of that and to make our lives easier doing development.
Absolutely. It's very cool. In fact, Visual Studio Code is based on this very concept, this type definitions, using TypeScript behind the scenes to get the IntelliSense and things that we get. Very cool.
Yep.
All right, so to wrap this part up, and then we're going to look at some stuff here. So it all compiles to JavaScript. You now have three options. You can compile to ES3, ES5, or ES6. The ES6 still kind of looks like ES5, but I think eventually, once all the browsers support ES6, it'll be compiling down to just regular ES6 code. That's something you can change either in your build settings if you're using like Grunt or Gulp or one of these tools we're going to talk about, or in Visual Studio, you just right-click on your project, and you can say, hey, this is my output mode. I want ES3. Because I can't support, for instance, JavaScript properties or something like that. Mm-hmm. So very, very cool, and a lot of ES6 features as well. So let's jump in to a quick little just run through here. And what we're going to do is just kind of walk you through the real basics of TypeScript for those that maybe haven't done it yet. So all right, so first thing, let me do just some normal stuff here. Let's just do a 5 and a y equals 5 like a number, and let's make a function called add that takes a, let's call it num1 and num2 just to kind of mix it up here.
What you're seeing on the left-hand side, so Dan's writing TypeScript on the left-hand side. This site, TypeScriptLang.org, has a playground site where it's compiling the TypeScript on the left-hand side to JavaScript live on the right-hand side using the TypeScript compiler. So you have a similar kind of experience like in Visual Studio and a bunch of the other editors, but what you're seeing is the stuff compiling down to JavaScript while he's writing the TypeScript.
And I should have mentioned, you can go to TypeScriptLang.org to get to this. You just click on that little play icon up there. And you'll notice that, as Andrew just kind of summed it up real nice, look what I typed on the left, which is TypeScript right now, but you're going, no, it's not. That's JavaScript. But look what it output on the right. Okay, just pretty normal stuff. And that's why I said it's a superset. You can take your existing code, just plug it on in, and you're good to go. Now, what's going to happen here, though? Those JavaScript gurus, the one that raised your hand will probably know this. What's going to happen if we run with an alert on this result? What are we going to get? Anyone, any ideas?
We didn't add the numbers.
Throw it out. Oh, I didn't add. Yeah, we're going to get nothing. minor detail, you might want to fill in your function. Yeah, so let me go ahead and return.
TypeScript will even do that for you, too.
Yeah, it's so cool that I was just expecting it to automate that for me. But all right, so let's run that, and you'll notice we get 55. I don't know if you can see that, but I'll let you do your Zoom thing. He's got a different setup than I do on my computer. But anyway, we got 55, which is obviously not right. Now, hopefully you have unit tests and things like that, and everybody likes to say they do testing, but not everybody does. How many actually do unit testing for real? Pretty good overall.
There's some liars.
Yeah, we need a lie detector, I think. But
I like the idea of doing it.
Yes. But maybe you do. Good for you. So what we can do with TypeScript is this. It's called TypeScript because we can come in and say, hey, this is a number. And this guy right here, notice it automatically went red on me. It says type string is not assignable to type number. Now, if you have an editor that recognizes some of these TypeScript, these are kind of compiler errors, if you will, such as Visual Studio, Visual Studio Code, and even Sublime has some plugins and some others, then you instantly know that, oh, you know, I screwed this up. Now, in this case, we typed it, so I don't know that that's that big of a deal, but we'll keep going here. So let's come on down to Y. We'll also say that's a number. Okay, so it did catch this. It still has the output there. But where it really gets cool is we can come into here and type these guys. And you'll notice you put a colon, so it's a little backwards from maybe our C-sharp code. And you put the colon in to type it. And now, let me, just to make it a little more obvious, let's pass in, like, you know, Fred right here. And see that red squiggly we instantly get. Pretty awesome. So I'm able to know right away that, hey, this isn't, you know, a valid thing. And even better than that, watch when I, let me just pull this out. And you'll notice that I get full IntelliSense there. In this case, you know, it depends on your editor. Notepad, they're still working on. You won't get it there. But you'll notice that right away we're able to say, hey, it's a number and it's a number. And so we can pass in, and now I can come up and obviously, you know, fix this guy, figure it out. And we could do X and Y, something like that. All right, very basic, but you get the idea. Now, you have numbers, you have strings. Well, look at that here in just a sec. You have arrays, and you have Booleans. Those are your base ones. And then you can also deal with nulls and some others, types. There's even an any. If I were to do this, Andrew, what ends up happening? Because I know we do this as far as types. What is the type of this? Any guesses? Okay, it'll actually infer. Okay, it will infer it, but that's a runtime thing. It defaults to any, it's called. So yeah, it does have type inference, so it's smart enough to try to figure it out, but it's really kind of like doing that. Now, because I assigned it, you're right, it'll figure it out, and ultimately it will be that. But you notice that if I take that out and run it, it's still going to do 55 or whatever there. All right.
Yeah, and that's kind of like, that's a nice little trick when you're actually trying to build out your, like, the types for, you're building, like, interfaces and such, and you don't know what a certain kind of an object's going to be that comes back, like if you're making a request to an HTTP service. We'll show you in one of our interfaces how we have it set up to the response that comes back. We're like a generic one that says, hey, it's coming back, it's an any, it's a collection of anys. So it's kind of a way to cheat a little bit.
All right. Let me do one other thing here. So that is an ES6 class. Now that's a TypeScript class as well. TypeScript is based upon ES6 concepts. Now some of you that maybe haven't seen this are probably going, ooh, very nice. Like that looks like the code I write, you know, on the server maybe.
Yep.
And so we now have a constructor here. And what I can do is even put in, we can do a little variable, a field, whatever you want to call it. And now we can say this.name equals name. So for those C-sharp gurus in the crowd, looks a lot like C-sharp, except for you actually use the keyword constructor there to do your work. Notice on the right what it's now outputting. Now, if you've ever done patterns at all, revealing module pattern, for instance, we're starting to get close to that here. Very cool. Now, another cool thing is, you know, how many want to use prototyping? How many actually truly understand prototyping? This goes back to, right, in JavaScript. The one person or two that raise your hand, you're probably going, yeah, I get it. But prototyping's kind of tricky in JavaScript. Well, another cool thing we can do is, let's say we have a manager, and I could say manager extends person. If I spell it right, I can. And now I just picked up the name. And we could even come down here now and say var mgr equals new manager. All right, and then on my manager, we can say manager dot, and we can start to dive into that guy. Now, right now, manager extends person, doesn't have a constructor, because what you have to do is, I'm going to hard code it. You can actually call into the base class, and I'm going to do Andrew here because he's so cool. And now notice the red kind of goes away. So it's basically telling me, if I would have shown you guys the error, that, hey, you extended it, but you didn't call the base constructor, which is a requirement with super. And now I can say manager dot, and there's name, and we could say change it to, Fred or whatever. All right, so that's kind of some of the basics of TypeScript, and some of the things we're going to start seeing is that you can do classes, you can do types, you can do generics, you can do interfaces, all this fun stuff.
Cool.
All right.
All right, jump over, and let's talk a little bit about, we're back to it, yes, we're back. Let's talk a little bit about the how part of this. So you saw kind of the what and the why, you saw a little bit of developing it, but you jump in to say, well, how do I get this into my project? How do I take advantage of this? The cool thing is the majority, there's a lot of editors out there, as Dan said, that already have TypeScript support built right in. The one that's missing from this list here is Visual Studio Code. I'd recommend that you actually go take a look at the video from a session from yesterday that John Papa and
Eric and Chris.
And Chris did. Yesterday I talked about Visual Studio Code, and it's really cool because it shows you that Visual Studio Code, when you're writing JavaScript, it even takes advantage of TypeScript features to give you some IntelliSense, even if you're not using TypeScript. If you're just writing JavaScript, it uses the TypeScript engine and the definitely typed definitions to take advantage of that and give you some more IntelliSense. There's other ones that we have, like Sublime. Brackets is a JavaScript editor, is an editor that's actually written in JavaScript. Those guys have TypeScript support, but they do it through an extension model. But the thing that I really want you to take away from this is that you can use anything, because we can have a build process using some sort of a build engine to automate the process of taking advantage of TypeScript. We've taken advantage of this inside of our project. So let me show you a little bit of what we've done here with our project. Now, at the end, we're going to give you a list of all of the, or a link to the source where you can grab this. But essentially, what our project does is it's all written in TypeScript, and then we run everything through an engine called Gulp. So Gulp, for those of you who aren't familiar, if you're traditional ASP.NET stuff, you're familiar with a tool called MS Build. That's Microsoft's build engine. And it's more of a configuration setup where you use XML to define tasks, and those tasks go do stuff. With Gulp, you instead are using JavaScript to write those tasks. So you get kind of a full stack experience here. So here you see I've got a task here called compile TS. That's going to go compile all of our TypeScript in the project. And the way we've defined it is that at the very top of this file, we have a configuration reference that we're making, that we've a configuration file that we're referencing. If I open that file up, I've got a couple different things saying, like, where will you find the source of the application? Where you find the source of everything within this project? Where's the actual Angular application? Where should all the stuff get compiled to? So when we're compiling all the TypeScript using Gulp, we're creating a new folder called /js and putting it all there. We don't check that file into source control or that folder into source control because it's just like a DLL as far as we're concerned. It's a generated output that we don't need to keep in source control. The compilers are going to do that for us. There's a couple other settings here as well. But what this does, a couple things. I showed you the compile TS. You can even do linting of your TypeScript. So linting is basically going to look at my code styles. And so now I can type in gulp-tslint. So if I come over here, this is a little dangerous here, but let's give it a shot. Open that up. Let's go to our project. CD, nope, there. Where am I? Oh, I'm already in demos. So let's go gulp TS, was it lint? What was my task name again?
I think it was TS-lint, yeah.
TS-lint, yeah. TS-lint.
Whatever we call it.
Lint. And what that's going to do is look at all of my TypeScript and see if there are any issues with it. If I went back to one of my TypeScript files and I removed something, so like if I come over here, let's do one that's not going to make that much of an impact. Like I'll add a space to this over here. I've got some definitions set up inside of this TS-lint JSON file down here that says, hey, trailing spaces are no good. So in this case here, it found that one error and reported it to me. And it's not even an error, it's just a code style thing. We've got other tasks that are in here as well that I would recommend you take a look at. Some of them are, you can just copy them straight and put them in your project. One of the challenges that you run into with TypeScript, or at least that I keep running into, is that if I come over here to like this routes file, I'm referencing things, and we'll dive into the code for the project in a minute, but you see I'm actually annotating this parameter that's coming in with as an Angular type. That's one example there. I've come over here to module. I'm annotating all of these guys, different settings. There's some interface that we've defined. The trick is that you're like, I put these references in there, but the compiler doesn't know what those things are unless I reference them from within the same file. So what you see up there at the very top of the file, there's two / references. And what these guys are doing up here at the very top is they're referencing a d.ts file, which is a definitely typed file or type definition. But in this case, these are just collections of existing type definitions that we've acquired. So what you see here is on the d.ts, here's a list of all the ones that we've acquired from the definitely typed project that we're referencing in our project, or using throughout our project. That's great. We've gone through and grabbed those guys using the definitely typed tools. But we want to be able to have all of our TypeScript files referenced as well. And so I have another one called expenseapp.d.ts. And so this one is a list of all of our TypeScript files we have in the entire project. I want a reference to that in every single one of my files right here so that I don't have to remember, okay, which files am I using in this file or which references do I need to add here? And it gets really messy at the top.
Very messy.
So what we did using Gulp is that if we take a look at the expense one again, you'll notice that I have like my own style of like commenting. So I've got like a / and an open curly bracket, and if I scroll all the way down to the bottom, I have a closing one. What I did is I created a task over here called gen.ts.refs, and what this one does is it says go grab all of the TypeScript files in the current project. It then pipes them through this engine, and it says use a plugin called inject, and it's going to look for these two tags, so a start tag and an end tag, and it says take all of those files that you find and write them out. This is where it's doing it on line 24. Write out to that file this string. So I'm building up this expenseapp.d.ts file all the time with the files that I'm adding. Now you're wondering, well, that's kind of interesting. I see how that would help, but you're telling me every time I add a file, I've got to go re-add this? Not really, because one of the other cool things about TypeScript is we have these watchers. Now what this guy is going to do is that I just go in and type in gulp, and what that will do is it'll now look at all of my TypeScript files throughout the entire project that's being defined there on line 73, look at all my TypeScript files, and every single time you see one of those files change, I want you to rerun tslint, then run compile ts, then run gen.ts.refs. So when I'm doing my development, it's pretty cool. It's pretty cool to where I can just say gulp over here on the side. It's going to go run those things. You see, I've got that one little error. Well, if I come back and fix that problem, where was that problem again?
Yeah,
that was on app routes line 5. So we go over to app routes line 5, I'll go to the top, let's remove that space, I'll hit save, I can't get back there fast enough, but what you see is it ran again right here and it said, well, let's go rerun tslint, compile and all that. So I usually have that up on one window while I'm doing my development, and if red stuff pops up, hey, you want to pay attention to it. It's pretty slick, you can have all your testing in there as well, and it's just a really constant continuous development experience.
And I want to add real quick, for those that are just doing pure Visual Studio, it actually will build in the ability to reference the files. Mm. So if you're going, well, do I have to even do that in Visual Studio? You don't have to. Now, I like having this separate process because of the linting and all that. But if you just want to use native Visual Studio, not the code, but Visual Studio, well, even Visual Studio Code will do some of this for you. But a lot of you might use, you know, different OSs or different operating or different editors. So we're kind of showing you something that works on everything.
Yeah, and that's the... We're doing it for that reason, for the reason of showing where it works everywhere. This project, you go open it up in any editor that you want, and it will work. Visual Studio, I guess we have to have a real name for Visual Studio now, not just Visual Studio Code.
VS Code
We didn't need another one, but the big Visual Studio, the new Visual Studio that they announced this week. The big guy even has plugins as an extension that you can add in the current production version of Visual Studio to get support for Gulp. Visual Studio 2015 is going to have that baked right in. So Microsoft is even adopting this tool as well. It's pretty slick. There's a bunch of different plugins, a ridiculous number of plugins. So so just take a look at it. That's how we've built the project up. It's got some good samples in there for you to take a look at. So let me talk a little bit here about Office 365, pivot a bit, and why do you want to consider this for using it for your development experience? I've got a couple points up here on the slide, but there's something else, a point that I want to make here. It's kind of my opinion on this. When we work in the cloud, we understand there's things like IaaS, so infrastructure as a service. It's, you know, virtualized hardware. We have PaaS, platform as a service. platform as a service is going to give us, you know, the ability to use different services in building our different applications. What I like, and then we also have SaaS, software as a service. That's like Office 365. You pay a subscription to get some different capabilities. What I like to think of with Office 365 and SharePoint is EPaaS. As a developer, I like to go build my own applications. I don't want to integrate it in with something else. But what's cool about this is there's a lot of things that Office 365 can provide, and all of those things can be taken advantage of inside of my app. Do you need workflow? SharePoint provides that. Do you need user profile information and augmented from different sources? SharePoint has that. What about managed metadata for tagging and a hierarchy and stuff? These things, there's a lot of different services that we can take advantage of. The app that we've done uses SharePoint lists to store the data for like employees and stuff like that, and expenses, and then we use OneDrive for Business or the Files API from Office 365 to show a reference to those different files. They got the lights working.
Thank goodness, because now I really can't see you.
Wow, I was looking right at that when it came on. So some of the challenges, though, when you're building applications associated with Office 365, you have to choose, like, if it's going to be a traditional Office 365 app, is it going to be a cloud app or is it going to be a SharePoint-hosted app? Meaning, does the app reside inside of SharePoint, all the files, and then get surfaced to the client? Or does it live somewhere else? That's the cloud app, where it can live in Azure or AWS or IIS or wherever. There's a server-side component to it. You've got to decide. Another thing, too, is that when you're doing this, you need to always protect these OAuth access tokens that you're going to use to authenticate with a service that's protected with OAuth 2 or uses OAuth 2 for its authentication model. You need to protect these access tokens because this stuff is like cash. Once you get an access token, anybody can use it. If I drop a $20 bill on the ground and you come up and grab it and head down to the street and go get a coffee, the person behind the counter is not going to say, that's Andrew's 20. You can't buy a coffee with that. If anybody's going to get coffee, let me know. I'll drop the 20. If you just bring me one back. So you need to make sure that you protect that. So that stuff is going to stay on the server. You need to usually create some sort of an intermediary site. And that's actually what we had to do with this project initially many months ago and before some Microsoft announced something that we'll show in just a minute. Another side, the client-side apps. Are going to need to have, if you build an app that is 100% client-side, HTML, CSS, and JavaScript, like the one that we have, if you want to talk to a Office 365 service, initially when they were released, we had to have an intermediary service that would go talk to that service on our behalf because those services didn't support cross-domain calls. So we couldn't make those cross-domain calls in the browser. We had to do it from the server side. So we had to have an intermediary that was protecting the tokens and making those calls on our behalf.
Let me tell you, that was a lot of fun.
That was, yeah, well, tongue-in-cheek, right?
Fun.
Yeah. So what Microsoft did here is they created this thing, created a new support for a new kind of OAuth flow, there's an OAuth flow called the implicit flow, and that allows us to have an authentication model to get the access token without having to protect it on the server side. That support was also, when they added that support, they also created a library, or I guess it's a pair of libraries, called ADALJS. So ADALJS is a client-side solution for creating this authentication model. It was designed initially to work with Angular. Before they went V1 with this, they actually split it out. So there's an ADALJS and an ADALAngularJS. And what they'll tell you is that it's really designed not to be used as just the core ADALJS. It's designed to be used inside of Angular. And you'll see why. We'll show you some of the code on what it does for you. If you want to get support for some of the other frameworks that are out there, like Ember, like Durandal, like Aurelia. If you want to add support for those, you can do that. I know that one of the developers on the team has been working on support for Ember. But it's really cool because it allows us to do all the authentication really easy. And actually, you did a lot of work with them on that. And there's actually a really funny quote when they went GA and V1. If you switch over real quick, we're going to show this quote here. So they announced this, that, hey, everything's done, it's all working and stuff. They say, hey, look, ADALJS reaches GA. And then here's a quote that Dan had, and I had the exact same experience. Dan says, it was so easy, I'm still in shock trying to figure out if it really worked.
I literally was in the Chrome tools going...
I think that worked.
Yeah, I was checking the network traffic going, no way. Because it just worked. And so actually, Vittorio, who's a friend from the Azure team, he's like, can I use that quote?
Yeah, it was pretty cool. It was like right out of the blue. It was I had the same experience. I put it in very little code to get it working. We'll show you that. Let's stop talking about stuff. Why don't we show the code?
Let's just show them.
All right, why don't you kick it
let's
off?
Let's run, actually,
oh,
start
run the
up
app.
Superstatic, and let's show them the app first.
Okay.
We'll see how this kind of implicit flow works here, and the app and all this fun stuff, and that way at the end, you'll be able to get the GitHub code if you want it, and kind of go from there. So
you want to, I'll just start doing it, you want to explain?
Is the server back up? Do you feel it, or is it still going?
No, he's been going.
Oh, he's going, okay, yep. Never mind. Yeah, go ahead. I don't remember your password, because now I'm in front of, 200 of my closest friends, so.
There we go.
So, we were on a login. Actually, log out real fast.
Oh, shoot.
That was too fast, man. Oh, we got to switch screens, too. You guys can't read minds?
It was awesome. You totally missed it.
Yeah, you just missed it. Moving on.
Did you catch that? Get your notes. Get your pictures done.
Okay, so we have a rather obvious login. This is on purpose so that anyone that tries it can see it. And there's even text about, click login. But go ahead and do it. And you're going to see that we instantly go off over here to our, Azure AD login. Go ahead and log us in, Andrew. And what's so cool about this is we literally didn't write any of that code to do the redirects. We didn't have to worry about the ID tokens. And this just now hit some SharePoint list data here. This app was kind of designed for a prototype of, hey, we have company data. It's already in SharePoint. We're not moving it. Too many people are using these lists. So let's build an app that can just leverage that data.
Mm.
That's kind of what's going on here. So the data itself is just customers and expenses. And then this is tying into the Files API.
Yeah, right, that's here, coming from my OneDrive for Business folder.
Yep.
Our account.
And then log out real quick, and you guys will see it'll say like redirect da 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 right there. Sign out in progress, and then you'll go kind of back to the app. Now the way this works is you actually have to in Azure. We're not going to have a whole lot of time to show this, but if you want to run off to Azure real quick, we can at least show them the app. I've now voted Andrew to be a code monkey for me because it's his laptop, so he'll feel better.
I'll start typing.
Yeah, there you go. So anyway, he's going to log into Azure. When you get into Azure, you'll have down at the bottom left, you'll have Azure Active Directory. And is anyone using Active Directory in here? Azure Active Directory. Okay, we have a few. It's actually very cool what they've done.
Mm.
And so he now can drill into his Active Directory and go to Applications. And you're going to see an expense app or expense manager there application. And yeah, actually show him the ad just real fast. So what you normally do is you can walk through and you can either pick from a gallery or do your own app. So if anyone's ever registered one of your apps with Facebook or Twitter or some other service, you have to go register the app, give it the URL and things, and then you're going to get back a client secret and all that. And we'll let him kind of show you the basic screens here.
There's.
All right, so this will go off and create an app. And then we're going to get basically a little client ID that we need, and then there's a tenant.
I'll jump over to the one that we already have.
Yeah, we'll use the one. So we'll jump into here. And once it loads, scroll down for me. Right there. Everybody see that client ID? So Adal.js, which we're going to show you, needs this. Okay, and then also show real quick the view endpoints. We'll show them the tenant.
Oh, yep, here we go. View endpoints.
All right, now notice that really lovely GUID, whatever you like to call it there. That's something we need as well. So there's kind of two things we need for Adal. That we can work with, that little guy right there.
That guy.
All right, so now that you've kind of seen that, what you do is you go register your app and go to the very bottom there and see the URL, reply URL?
Oh, sorry, yep.
That normally, obviously, would be a real site. We're hitting localhost, but it does work with localhost, which is very cool.
Mm-hmm.
Real quick, talk about the security down there, because
so,
this is important.
When one of the things you can do, what you're doing is when you create the app, you're actually going to give the app permission to do stuff. Now, that the app isn't actually doing these things. They're called delegated permissions. And so what you're saying is that if someone goes to use the app, I'm going to allow the user to grant the app permissions to do these kinds of things. And so in this case here, I went ahead and I added an application. We had a few options down here. There's Power BI. There's the Unified API that you've seen talked about this week, SharePoint Online, Exchange Online. We've gone ahead and added SharePoint Online. And over here on the delegated permissions, we've chosen things like it can read and write user files. We didn't really need that. We just needed the read user files. That's the OneDrive for Business or the Files API. We can read and write items to site collections. That's the Sites API in Office 365, which you may be familiar with just the REST API. But you can see other things here like manage metadata. That one's new. We've got the ability to go through and work with user profiles and such, but these permissions here, your app will need this. And the first time your user goes to use this app, they'll be prompted to say, hey, this app needs these permissions. Will you grant this app permissions to for your account? And you have to say yes or no for it to go through and grant those. One you should definitely keep in mind here yes. is this one where it says enable sign-on and re-user profiles for the Azure Active Directory. You're always going to have that one checked. I don't recommend you turn it off. If you do turn it off, you'll see why you need to turn it on because you won't be able to use your app.
Let me tell you what happens. You waste 4 hours of your life trying to figure out why you can't log in.
That hasn't happened. That hasn't happened though, right?
Not that it happened to me, but that's how I've heard that's what happened.
I have a friend that's done that before, and it's not a good thing, right? The friend thing. But yeah, it's one of those things that when you're building in Visual Studio, the tools that we have for Office 365, when you go through the Ad Connected service, when you're creating an Office 365 app or a website that uses the Office 365 APIs, it creates this application for you, and it adds those different permissions for you. So you can add different permissions, and they're constantly working and adding more and more stuff. It's pretty slick. So that's how we create the application here. You want to talk
to Adal? Yeah. Running. So all right, what we're going to do the rest of the time? We only got about 15 minutes, I think. So the rest of the time, now that you've seen a little bit on TypeScript, you've seen a little bit of how to set it up with Gulp, or you could just use the big boy Visual Studio. We'll call it. I guess you got little boy and big boy. I've just coined that term. What we're going to do now is just walk through some of the key features of the app. I mean, the app itself, you'll be able to download if you want to get to it. We follow a lot of patterns and things like that. We're not going to have time to go into all that. But so we start off here in this app.module.ts, and you'll notice on line 8 there, we're actually defining our module. So if you've done Angular before, this is basically creating the bucket for our app that we're going to put stuff in. And notice we get IntelliSense. Well, that tsd.d.ts at the very top, that's actually pulling in this type definition file that Andrew's already talked about. And you go to, by the way, you can go to definitelytyped.org if you're interested. And there's ways you can even automate this, but again, in the interest of time, we'll just mention it. So definitelytyped.org will get you access to all this. So once we do the module, notice that we also then configure a few key things. So actually, jump down to highlight line 17, 18 there for me. So first off, we configure the routes. Now, that's just standard Angular routing. There's nothing real fancy there, pretty normal stuff. So we can load our different views for those that are maybe new to Angular a little bit. The second line, this is the key one here that gives us the Azure Active Directory login. And this is ADAL. And so that calls into this adal.configure, you'll notice. So first off, notice that we have a module at the top, which is a TypeScript module. We have a class we're exporting out of the module. If you're new to that, that's kind of how it's going to work in ES6 as well. You basically expose what you want, and the other stuff is sort of implicitly private if you don't export it to be able to get to it. And then notice that we're injecting in some things here like the HTTP provider. Well, what's going to happen is every AJAX request that happens, ADAL is going to intercept that. That's the adal.angular or whatever it is
yep.
file that Andrew mentioned.
Yep.
There's the tenant. We mentioned we clicked on view endpoints to get to the tenant. There's the client ID. That's the one that was in the application page we just showed you. So we're just grabbing those from a constants file. Yeah, run off just real quick. And, all right, there they are. And then the other thing we have to specify, just real quick, why don't you talk about endpoints there?
Yeah, so if you go back and we look at this, you'll see where we're also having to pass in a collection of endpoints into the initialization for the ADAL provider. And after we pass in this whole object, we're going to pass in the HTTP provider so that now the service that we have in ADAL that they created for Angular, it's now attaching itself through, as Dan said, the HTTP interceptor. But we have to tell it, when do you care about the authentication piece? So if I come over here and look at the constants again, what you'll see is this object that we have, AAD endpoints. And it's got a syntax of having an object, and then we'll have a property and a value for that object. Each one of those properties is going to be a different endpoint. Now, on the left-hand side, the property name, that's the first part of the endpoint. I'll explain why we need that in a second. The right side that you see over here, the right side of this is the resource ID that we need in some of the Office 365 services. So what's happening here? What I'm telling ADAL.js is to say, whenever you see an HTTP request come out of Angular that starts with that URL with that and using that resource ID, that's a protected resource. And you need to make sure that you include the OAuth2 access token in the header, in the authorization header for every request. It does that magically. Dan and I hadn't write any code to have to do this authentication. If I'm not already logged in, ADAL.js will hold that request, it'll send me over to Azure AD, make me log in, come back, grab that access token, create that recreate that REST request that, or that HTTP request that I was making from Angular, put the authorization header into it, then make the request and get the response. It does all of that stuff automatically. It is wickedly
awesome.
Cool.
Even refresh tokens.
Yeah, to get this ADAL.js stuff working, all we had to do was create this little settings object, which I guess we just did it for reusability or make it easier to follow.
Just maintenance.
And we wrote this one function. That's all we did to get the authentication stuff working. That's freaking cool.
That's why I was like, is this really working?
Yeah.
Because it's like, I didn't write that much. So.
Well, it does show them the other part too about the routes, how we secured the routes. So the other part too about the routes is that you see some of these routes, like the login route, we don't want that to force authentication here because we're going to redirect you over. But one of the other things that the ADAL.angular.js file does is that it lets us add another property to any routes called require AD login. If it's not there, but the default is false. But what this does is it says, hey, within the app, if you go to one of those URLs, I'm going to force you to go make sure you're authenticated. And if you're not, I'm going to send you over to Azure to go log in. So if I give a deep link into this, now you might be looking at this going, wait a minute, this is all JavaScript. I can see what's secured and what's not secured, so I can just type in the URL and get whatever I need. I don't know about you, but I don't care if you can see the source code for my application. What I really care about is I don't want you to see the data. That's the important part of the apps. Seeing what the views look like, that doesn't matter.
You
show
templates.
Me, yeah, show me your Outlook. I don't if there's no email in it, then it's useless to me. I want to see your email. I don't really want to see your, I'm channeling the NSA, but I don't want to see your stuff, okay? But, okay. So we have a module, we got configuration. What do you want to do next?
Let's wrap up by looking at some of the Office 365. Let's look at the factories.
And do the factories?
Services. We did.
You want to do the data service, the file service?
Let's do the data one, and then we'll do the file real quick. So I'll type out that, and then we'll wrap up with that. So the last piece is that homepage just show loaded in a bunch of customer data, right? And we mentioned that we're kind of assuming that we have a company where, you know, a lot of our data is maybe in a database, but some of the data is in SharePoint as well. We want to get to both resources. Maybe we want to pull in from a local database and from SharePoint. So, scroll on down for me. And first off, there's a bunch of functions in here. And this is a pretty big TypeScript class. This is an Angular service. And you'll notice that we have some RESTful type of, if you've done much SharePoint REST before, you'll recognize this. So yep, that code right there. This is where we're actually calling out. And the beauty of ADAL and what we just showed you is now we're out of the business of having to worry about if they should be getting to this or not. Based upon the HTTP requests, the resource management and the tokens and all that fun stuff with OAuth, which is really fun to write by hand, right? it does all that. And so now all we're doing is basically saying, hey, Angular, do an HTTP standard GET and go grab the URL. And then when it comes back, I'm just casing some properties, and you'll notice there's a case props and stuff like that. That's all, doesn't really matter. Mm. But that is just massaging the data we get back, and then ultimately it's gonna pass it to an Angular controller, which then goes to the view.
Yeah,
now that's the first factory.
You're really only gonna care about this. This is just a style that we did.
That's the part that matters.
It's when SharePoint gives us the data back, is it title case, is it camel case, and we're just changing the way the data comes back so the objects are similar to the other JavaScript objects we have in the application. That's just a style thing. It has nothing to do with TypeScript or anything else.
Forget about the man behind the curtains there.
Yeah.
So, all right, jump over to the files one.
So the other one that we have is the files API, file service to talk to the files endpoint. This one here, I've got a little constructor that's creating this. You can see that we've actually set up injecting different things like the HTTP service, the location service. Hey, this is pretty cool. We didn't tell them about this. This keyword right here, you know when you create a class, and you create different properties on that class, and you want those, you want to be able to pass them in, but into your constructor, but you want to make those properties private to be able to use them throughout your app, and so when you, throughout your class. So when you pass them in, you pass them in the constructor, and then within the constructor, it's like this dot, whatever the name of that private property is, and set the value of the parameter that's come in, right? Know what I'm talking about? Well, one of the things that this does is that this keyword private, putting it before the different parameters coming in, what that's going to do is implicitly or behind the scenes, it's creating an internal private member inside this class called, in this case here, $HTTP, so that later I can do things like this.$HTTP and use that service without having to define some private properties up here and setting those values back. So that's just a little, think about
pretty
that like
awesome.
A shorthand kind
it's
of a
shorthand.
Thing.
Shorthand, it's yeah. awesome. You can also do public if you want it to be public.
Right, yeah. So in this case here, what we're doing, I've got a method called getUserFiles, and what that's going to do is go create my endpoint request. So I'm just saying, go to my OneDrive endpoint here. You might have saw that in the settings file that we were referencing earlier. Going to the /files, get by path, looking at my receipts folder, and then getting all the children, all the contents of that folder. You remember when I had that dropdown that popped up, you saw a bunch of PDFs. That's what this is getting. And then here I'm executing the request. Now this is another one of the things I love about TypeScript. The response that comes back from this service is not a typed response. It's just a bunch of JSON data that comes back. So you see there I've got where on the side where it says, here's the data that's coming back. Right here is result. Now, when I reference this data, like result.data.value, what kind of data is that? Do you have any idea? It's
with
file.
Your, with your awesome documentation?
No, yeah, I don't, that's not mine. Who else is up here?
No, I don't know.
So, yeah, we don't know what that is, right? We don't know what that is. I mean, it's the files API tells us what it is, but you've got to go over and look at the response
it.
That comes back and what are the properties, and like, that's a pain in the butt. So what I like to do is I come over here and I've added in an interface, and I said, this is the data that comes back. I want you to type it, or I want you to treat it as a type called IHTTP data response. So if I come over here into my shared folder, I look at my interfaces, what you'll see is I have one here called my IHTTP data response. And that's got a data property on it, and we cheated. We just threw an any on there and just
that
said, hey, look.
Any.
Yeah,
we
didn't
mean flexible.
We weren't going to go all the way with that part of the demo. But you know what? No problem. Because what I can do now to type the data that comes back is instead of using any right here, it's going to be a collection of a bunch
of
different
items.
You
had it though. Go back to your factory real fast.
Go back to my
service.
The service?
Yeah.
Files. Where is it? Files.
Yeah, go see that share.ireceipt.
Yeah, so
you do have one.
Yeah, so I typed it in there once I got it in, but wouldn't it be nice if I didn't have to do that? So what I could have done is that within this interface here, where's my interface? Interfaces, instead of calling it at any, I could have done iReceipt and say it's an array. So the data that comes back is a collection of iReceipts. Those iReceipts are, where are they, down here?
Right there.
They're going to give me back IDs, names, web URLs. Those are going to be the different properties coming that's inside the JSON response. So that now when I'm working with the data response that comes back, I have strongly typed information on that response, not just some generic stuff that I have to remember what those different fields were. That's pretty cool. It can get a little tedious as you're working through it because you're calling different services, different queries.
Which is why we did any on the one.
Right, exactly, yeah. So
we were like,
this
hey,
one,
we got a week to do this. So.
Yeah, so we couldn't get that one done. But yeah, that's another one of the benefits there. And this question mark notation says that you may or may not get this object coming back. Right, we may have done a select statement that said we didn't care about the IDs, and it only gave me back the name and the web URL.
Yep.
Cool. What else do you want to show? We have a few more minutes.
Yeah, we're almost done here. So let's wrap up with let's go to the customer controller, the home
customer.
Page controller.
Okay.
And we'll just show where we're calling the service. So those doing Angular will know that you have views and you have controllers, and your controller typically calls off to a service to get the data. That's what we're doing.
Yeah.
So our two services that we just showed you, the files and the data service one, you know, they're reusable. We can reuse those across any number of controllers in our app to get our customers, our expenses, our files, all that fun. So there's just a quick example of data service on line 107 there is being injected in, typical Angular type code in this case. And we're then calling into this employee's service here to go get the data. And we must not have a reference on that one, but that's all right. And then when we get back the data, you might notice, highlight line 108 there real fast, and we'll wrap up here. All right, that is another TypeScript feature that is also an ES6 feature. Now, those that have done lambdas before will probably recognize that. In ES6, we call it a fat arrow, typically, because it does look like a bigger arrow. But it's a replacement, basically, for anonymous functions. And there's even some other benefits we won't have time to get into on it. But anyway, that's another TypeScript feature that really minimizes the amount of code. And I'll tell you to wrap up here.
Dan had to write that part because I don't have that key, that little equals greater than on my keyboard.
Yeah, that was on my special keyboard.
Yeah.
When we got done with this app, the first version of this was actually in ES5, normal JavaScript. Hmm. And Andrew and I spent, I don't know, 10 days or so at the most.
No, it took like 60.
Was it 60? Okay, whatever. I'm trying to sound good, you know. We spent whatever it was. It wasn't too long. And by the time we got done, both of our responses were, that was freaking awesome. Because I love JavaScript. I actually, for a while, I was one of two people on the planet that did. But I've always liked it, actually. And when we did this, though, we were on Skype, like, constantly. Mm. And, you know, we were like, man, that was really cool. Because the interface has just made all the difference.
Yeah, what I would recommend you do, TypeScript is one of those things, to me, that when I first jumped into this, it was a little, I'd say it was a little hard to kind of wrapping my brain around. And you start using it, and you kind of stub your toe a few times here and there. But once I started using it for like 2 or 3 days, I was absolutely in love with it. And same thing with this app. And it's, I had, right after we built this one, I had to turn around and write another app, but I had to do it in JavaScript. I couldn't do it in TypeScript. And I was doing it as a hands-on lab for someone. So I couldn't like write the TypeScript and then compile it to JavaScript and then show the JavaScript. I needed the users to write the JavaScript. It was so painful going back to writing just standard JavaScript now.
Seriously, now so, I'm like, why?
Yeah, so I don't, I mean, the session I did yesterday, all the stuff that I'm doing now with JavaScript, I use TypeScript. Even when I'm doing Node.js, server-side JavaScript, it's all using TypeScript. We had a battle about if we were going to make the gulp file TypeScript as well, but that's kind of like
even
a...
You started making the gulp file TypeScript, and I'm like, okay, no, that's going too far.
Well, but the gulp file, we needed it to be JavaScript so that it can compile the TypeScript, but then we wanted to write it as TypeScript,
egg,
so it's
right?
like... We can write it as TypeScript, but just don't delete the .js file. But yeah, it's pretty cool. These two links that we have up here, the second link is going to take you deeper inside the first link, okay? So what the first link is, Microsoft, or the Office team, their site, dev.office.com, has got tons of great resources and documentation and labs and samples and videos and training and a ridiculous amount of resources that'll help you get started with doing Office 365 development. There are different courses within that that are provided in there. There's one repository in GitHub that you see there called training content in the Office Dev organization. That repository is a massive amount of useful information. There are different courses. There's a specific course that talks about building applications that don't have building a specific kind of application without Microsoft technologies. And that course that we're referencing, 7-2, is building this application. So we give you this application to as a static kind of a thing, and then you go through a hands-on lab to start adding in a bunch of the ADALJS, to add the dynamic pieces for calling the different REST APIs, for the Sites API, for the Files API. So good hands-on lab there. And then the solution or the final output of that lab, I give you a link to it, diving into the link. It's really long, but that's the sample that Dan and I were showing you here from the lab that you actually end up building in there. So if you want to go check it out, two great links for you can go get this stuff.
All right, so to wrap up then, I hope you get a pretty good idea about how there's a learning curve. I won't lie to you, like Andrew said. But once you get the hang of TypeScript, whether or not you need Gulp, maybe you don't, maybe you do, or Grunt or one of those others. If you're just using pure Visual Studio, you might choose not to use them. We went through that. We talked about ADAL, and then obviously we talked about calling some of the RESTful services with what, Files API,
yep, file.
SharePoint, and there's even others you could do as well there. So to wrap up then, I hope everybody gets a good feel for TypeScript, Angular, and all that, and definitely check out the sample if you're interested in more details.
Cool. Thanks a lot, everybody. Hope you have a great rest of the show.